welcome to yet another episode of What Page Are You On? It me, Bethany Rutter. I'm not here with my good friend and business partner, Alice Slater. Instead, I'm here with my new hopeful friend, Lindsay Kelk.
It me.
It yes. You, Lindsay it Kelk. So, What Page Are You On is not necessarily known for chatting about and recommending rom-coms, but...
Noted.
I am a baby in the long journey that you have been on for many years.
Yes.
So, for purely selfish reasons, I wanted to talk to you as, like, a grande dame of rom-com writing. And I really hope that, like, you know, even if it is a slight departure from the usual, you know, we quite thrillery, quite dark.
Love it.
That, yeah, even if it's a bit of a departure from that, that people listening at home will get something out of this because you write truly delightful books. I really want to talk to you, and yeah, I hope people enjoy it.
I mean, I'm really only in the podcast business ever to make friends with people that I find interesting.
So true. It's so, yeah, I genuinely love using interviewing people as an excuse.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah, to meet nice
love
new
it.
People. And I wasn't like scared of meeting you because I follow you on Twitter and you seem very nice.
I do seem very nice. I've been told that that's true. So
Good. Thank you.
That means that's working. Excellent.
So the reason that we are here is because you have a new book out, which is
The title's not on the proof. Which
no, I knew it was on a night like this. And then picking up the proof, I was like, oh my God, I forgot. Like, there's so many words and none of them is on this fine. On a night like this.
Yes.
Which I have read and I loved.
Oh, thank you very much.
Please would you nutshell the plot for me because I'm not famous for my nutshell plot.
Same, and I really should be at this point. But in a nutshell, this is a book. In a nutshell, it is a modern retelling of a Cinderella story, which tells you where we are at, tells you what it does on the tin. But it is about a temp called Fran, who is very much at a point in her life where she's a little bit stuck, a little bit thinking, is this where we're at? And this is what my lot is. Who on a whim contacts a former recruitment agency that she worked with to see if they have any cool temp jobs going and is offered the opportunity to assist a mega celeb on her way to a mega celeb ball on an exclusive island in Italy. And she, spoiler alert, takes the job. It would be a bit rubbish if she didn't.
Yeah.
So I don't really feel like that's too much of a spoiler. And shenanigans ensue, which I won't delve into, but she goes to the ball, meets some interesting folks and meets a gentleman who offers her a once in a lifetime opportunity to hang out as pals, let's call it, as you know, no last names, no life stories,
no strings attached,
just bezzy mates hanging out. Let's see what happens this evening, and yet more shenanigans ensue, and that's where we go.
So I found it extremely fun.
Thank you.
Was it fun for you to write?
In the end, yes. And at the beginning, no. Because I wrote it during lockdown. And right at the beginning of lockdown was when I started writing it. So it started off as very like, well, I've got a good 2 weeks to crack out somewhere.
Yeah, that famous 3 week lockdown that we all promised.
And it just, that lockdown just kept getting longer and longer and longer. And the book just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And a couple of times, I mean, I wrote 30,000 words and then had to start over. Completely over about 2 weeks before the first draft was due, had to say to my editor, we're not doing this because it's terrible, because it did seem as though some of my lockdown anxiety was coming out in the book, and I had to scrap it and start over. And then once I committed to saying, let's make this the opposite of what's happening in my actual real life now, it really became incredibly fun at that point.
Yeah, because that was what I was thinking as I was reading it. I was like, not only does Miss Verona not exist in this world, but do you think that in general, like, our desire for escapism has probably increased?
Yes, I would say from my perspective and my anecdotal evidence of people contacting me and me, what I'm reading and what I'm seeing online and what I'm doing with my time, the people that have been in touch with me absolutely just are looking for something that is completely other, that you can just sort of absolve yourself of responsibility for the real world for a couple of hours. And lose yourself in it.
And I feel like this one in particular, because it involves so much like travel, glamour, like literal escapism from a kind of very standard human life into this very like glamorous other life. You know, just the idea of like going to Italy, like that is a thing that...
Just going.
Yeah, going somewhere in a, you know, unworried about way. For me... I'm very like attached to, as a writer, I'm very like self-conscious and very attached to like plausibility.
Yes.
So it was really nice to read a book where I was like, oh, like maybe not everything has to be like completely rooted in like actual provable experiences. Yes. Like, yeah, it just doesn't matter. And it's so fun to read. So like on that note, I would like to thank you for allowing me to be like,
thank you.
Oh, you know, maybe I can imagine like worlds I have not necessarily entered, and it doesn't all have to be like, but what about this little minute detail? Like, readers just don't care, do they?
No. And it's so interesting you say that, because I'm the same. Like, I find it really hard to suspend my disbelief, says the fan of professional wrestling. Like, I think that's where all of my suspension of disbelief has gone, in pro wrestling. So I really need to be able to grip something that's tangible. And I think even when I'm writing something utterly fantastical, I have to be able to believe that the people are real.
Yeah.
So it's like, no matter how fantastical and unrealistic the situation, I have to see how that person got there.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and believe that their reactions to these unusual situations are human.
So I think whenever I read a book that's just so out there, and I'm like, but no one, you would never do that. No one would ever do that. Because you think about fantasy novels and thrillers, where you're like, well, how would I know how it would behave if I met, you know, I'm like Patrick Bateman, I don't know. But I want to know how the writer got there and how they made me believe it. That's super important to me. So thanks, I'm glad you were able to enjoy it.
No, it was so fun. And like, yeah, it was like quite liberating for me to just be like, oh, cool. So like, every idea I ever have for a book, I don't need to worry about like whether it is strictly like from the true world of my personal life that I can recreate like in minute detail.
You just have to. I remember someone talking to me about this years ago, and they said to me, because I said the same thing, I was like, well, I have to go to the place to research it, otherwise people will know. And they're like, or you could just be a good writer and do your job. And I was like, what? And he turned around and he was like, how many dragons do you think George R.R. Martin hangs out with? I'm like, that's
so true.
That's an excellent point, because you know who's not worried about this? Yeah, straight white men.
Yeah,
so like, true. Notably less concerned.
And like, if it's a real place, you can like do a little walk around on Google Maps.
Exactly.
And if it's a fictional wildly rich person ball, like, none of your readers are going to have been to that.
I mean, very few.
Yeah,
I'm presumably assuming Rihanna isn't, it's not the top of her reading list.
I mean, like, it might be.
She can have one. If you're listening, Rihanna, we'll get you one. Probably haven't been to the Met Gala that often if you're reading it. Maybe, I don't know, if you have, let me know. Let me know what
it
was like.
Yeah.
Gagging to know.
Yeah, for my future research.
Exactly.
Do you think that like personal development of a protagonist is an essential part of rom-com, or do you think it is mostly just like the romance and then this personal development angle is like nice to have?
Yeah, I think it's totally dependent on each author individually for me and the reader as well, because some readers don't need that. Some readers just want to disappear into a trope, into a setup. They want to know exactly what they're getting, and they want to come out totally satisfied and happy with what they got. And that is super valid, especially these days where you're like, please don't make me do gymnastics to get here.
Yeah.
For me as a writer and as a reader, I react so much better to a book that has something to say, however mild it might be. And like, I find it really hard to write if there isn't like a point to it, which the point could be it's a rom-com, but I do find I get along with my own characters a lot better when they've got some meat on their bones and they had a reason for doing the things that they're doing.
Yeah, because I feel like that person, you know, whatever I just referred to as like personal development, in many ways is just like a kind of motivation for why they are, you know, kind of behaving the way they behave through the story anyway. So it's just giving a resolution to like
Absolutely.
A character with a backstory that you invented.
And also like deeply selfish for my part, because I can work through my own stuff.
So true.
Like, I'm gonna get some personal catharsis
by
forcing this character to go through some crappy stuff that I went through, but it's really I recommend it to people to try that.
Yeah,
like, give 100%. It a shot, write a book.
Yeah, like, even for purely selfish reasons, it is
so
very
much cheaper
good.
Than therapy. Yeah. Like, get it done.
Yeah. And you may help someone else.
Exactly.
You
exactly.
may inspire them to think about something they had not thought about.
Precisely.
So I'm very interested as a writer in your experience of writing like several thousand words and then being like, this is not happening.
Yes.
So what can you like, were you kind of clear on what was not working for you and then what you needed to do?
I was in this instance, and I've only ever done it once before, and I threw out a whole book. I got almost like two-thirds of the way through, and I just knew it wasn't right. And it was just gut, like, it's just gut instinct that I knew if I put it out, I wouldn't feel good about it, and it just wasn't coming together. And in this one, it was, I was trying to take it in the direction where, like, thankfully I think it goes where I wanted it to go. And I'd got all the way onto the boat, like, we were, you know, spoiler alert, the boat, but I was all the way there, it was really heavy and just really angsty and quite hard to read. And I think there's like valuable work there for a very different kind of book when I read it back, but it just wasn't what I needed it to be in this instance. But it does tend to be a gut feeling. I think you, and that, it's in you, it's intrinsic. You have to learn to listen to that, but it's also, you have to learn to trust it. Like, you know, you do know, but you have to learn to trust yourself.
Yeah.
To trust that you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's come over time for sure. But yeah, it was just one day I sat down with it and I just read it over and I was just like, it's real dark.
Yeah.
Very heavy. Can't really come back from this and go to a fun ball have a wacky time.
And yeah, that probably was like a product of
the time. Yeah, it definitely was. And also, I was watching loads of Succession. And I was like, what if I wrote a rom-com of Succession? And it's like,
There's a reason that Succession is not a rom-com.
Come back.
But I liked maybe you were watching some Below Deck as well, because I enjoyed a little bit. I was like, as soon as we were on the boat, I was like, oh, it's like Below Deck. I can imagine the boat.
I'll send you the outtakes because I watched so much Below Deck and we cut loads of boat stuff and I was dead proud of my boat knowledge. So yes, Below Deck Med, loads of it.
I am so happy that because Below Deck is now Bravo's biggest franchise, there is now not a time of the year where we are without Below Deck.
What a time to be alive.
We are so blessed.
What a gift.
I love it so much.
It's so great.
So yeah, from that point of view, I very much enjoyed
excellent
my time on the boat. Amazing. On the Songbird.
Amazing. On the Songbird, yes.
So you are quite far down the road of being having like a long career as a lady writer.
As a lady novelist, yes.
I feel like most of the interviews I do on the pod are actually with, like, debuts, and so you're in a very different position to the people that I normally talk to. And how do you feel that, like, your actual writing or, like, the scope of what you're interested in writing about has changed over your illustrious career?
Yeah, it has. It's 12 years this year since my first book came out, which is, I can't really fathom it, because every day that I get to do it, I'm a little bit like, when is the day they're gonna say psych? Like, no more for you. Yes, it definitely, I'm way more introspective about it than I used to be, and I think I used to be a lot more concerned. Obviously, the first book I was just writing for myself. I never thought I would publish it, never thought anyone would see it. It was very much just an exercise for me to write because I loved it. But then once you signed a deal and once there are eyes on it, and once you have expectations, and then the further along you go, fingers crossed, the more successful things get, the more readers are there and the more expectations there are, it becomes very hard to keep that internal story and your own voice pure, for want of a better word. You start, the expectations of others begin to weigh on you, or they did on me. And I suddenly was like, well, what if and I wrote a series for a long time, and it was like, well, what if the readers hate this? What if they hate this decision I've made for these characters?
The I Heart books.
And people would write to me, and they'd be like, I think this should happen in the next one. And I was like, well, that's not happening in the next one. So I'm like, wait, am I letting them down? And what am I? And I think it's really hard to shut out the voices and know you've just got to write what you feel and hear and believe. And if you try and do fan service, or if you try and write to a trend or a topic, it can be, I think, very difficult, and it can trip you up. And there definitely was a point in the middle where I was at one point publishing two books a year, but I was also like, I had no life, and I was just writing all the time. And I just had to sort of stop myself and say, I still love all those books, but I was like, am I happy what I'm doing, or am I just doing it?
Am I like a machine?
Yeah.
Or am I a writer?
And it was like, I'm serving this rather than actually serving me, if that makes sense. It was like, I'm hitting numbers, I'm hitting dates, I'm hitting targets, and I love them and stand by them, and they're great, but I wasn't enjoying the process as much. It became a job. And I'm so happy when people tell me they love those books, because I'm like, yeah, I was a pretty unhappy, crappy time in my life, like, and all I was doing was writing. And
so were you putting out like two books from the same series, or was
it
like
usually a series book and then a non-series, or a series book and then I did a sort of a trilogy sort of followed on. And And it was great because on one hand, I was very outwardly, it was like, I'm so successful and I'm so happy and everyone loves it and it's so great. And then inside, my personal life fell apart and I couldn't keep my stuff together. And it was like, yay, therapy. But like, thankfully, someone sort of took me in hand and was like, you okay? Because you're working a lot. And I think we don't always recognize that as a sign of, you know, we think of depression and mental health or whatever as like just sitting around being miserable, not doing anything.
Being
sometimes it shows the other way, where it's like, nope, throw yourself into the one thing you find value in yourself. And it genuinely, I've had to learn to separate all those voices to, yes, you want to be successful and value what you're doing, but you can't place all your self-worth in other people's value and expectation of it. So now it's very much, I write what I think is really important to me. And obviously my editor gets a say because that's literally what she does and she's amazing at it. But I try really hard to just like tell the truth in the story I'm writing rather than worry about getting the story out.
Yeah, because it is like as soon as you become, you like enter the machine of like publishing, it isn't, or it is less about like this idea that you had on your own, completely devoid of like commercial
impetus. It's not yours
anymore.
Yeah. It's not yours anymore. And as soon as the book is out, it's really not yours anymore. Like, I can't listen to my audiobooks because it's read so differently to how it reads in my head. And the audio readers are exceptional. And Carrie Hope Fletcher read this one, which was amazing. And she's such a talented actor and a storyteller in her own right. I was so excited when they told me she was doing it. But I knew I wouldn't be able to just sit down and listen to it because it's such a personal thing. How can it not be? And then suddenly it's not yours anymore. And people will write to me and tell me how they felt about something or the reaction they had to a certain point. And I'll be like, oh my God, I never even saw it that way.
Yeah.
So it's all learning all the time. You're just always learning.
And do you feel like you've kind of achieved some kind of equilibrium now between like back in the day when it was all yours and you didn't have to worry about anything. And then the midpoint where it was like very stressful and you felt kind of like under pressure to produce.
I feel better. This book really, one in a million, that was a couple back. On a night like this, because I had longer to do it, because we sort of published a little bit later than we usually do, and because of lockdown, gave me so much time, whether I liked it or not. I spent so much time with it, more than I usually had, and it really has helped me reset like what I need out of it. Which, you know, we're women, we're not taught to prioritize what we need. You know, and I know people aren't in general, but especially women.
Yeah.
And I wasn't, and I've now really sort of taken myself out, and I know it's a better book. I'm really proud of it because I know I gave it what it deserved.
Yeah, maybe at a different time you would not have felt like you had the literal time and also the confidence or kind of experience to be like, this is not working, I need more time. If you're like, either you get this book and it's not what I want it to be, or you get the book that it should be, but you have to wait for it.
100%. And it's like I say, it's just constantly learning about yourself as much as the book and the process and the writing process. And it's like when people are like, tell me about your writing process, I'm like, oh my God, I wish I could. Like, I wish there was a pattern. I wish I could tell you it's exactly the same every time. But you just have to sort of go with it and make it work around you. And sometimes they make you stay in your house for 18 months in California and you can't leave, so like that will really sort you out,
and that will either make it very good or very difficult or a mix of both. So I feel like on a night like this wears its Cinderella story quite lightly, like it isn't you know, extremely...
it's not a direct retelling.
So was that your intention when you set out? You were like, I'm gonna do a kind of light Cinderella retelling, or did you just find that was quite a handy little...
It was a thread that came not right away, because the book, the original idea of the book came from, you'll be pleased to know, the yacht, from a story a friend of a friend of a friend had told me years ago. And I remember talking to my editor about it, and it was a story, I can't remember who it was, so I can't even drop a minute, but it was somebody who told me the story about a friend of theirs who had worked on a yacht with a celebrity doing some other random job, and they stopped at some, I think it was a Greek island, for lunch on this yacht, as you do when you're mega rich. And they said, like, meet back here at this time. And when they went back, the yacht was gone, because the celeb had just been like, not for me, I'm off. And this person was just like stranded on this island and called their agent and was like, what? And they eventually like sent a helicopter to get them and brought them back. And I was like, well, I would have gone home, but sure, okay. And it stuck with me forever, and I sat on that nugget, because I'm like, what a great rom-com. And for years I've been like, how is that my rom-com? Where does it fit in? And it, like, in the very beginning of this, like, the ball wasn't a thing. It was just the yachts and the celebrity was just to get her to the island, and then it was going to be this very straightforward rom-com that I'd been thinking about. And then the ball just sort of appeared out of nowhere, because I was like, well, why would a celebrity be going to this island? Like, maybe she'd be going to, like, a Met Gala type thing. And then that's how that all... And then once you've got a ball, you're like, well, bugger me, it's Cinderella.
Yeah.
So that's when it all sort of fell... And then it really did fall into place, and that really helped.
It's so funny that the so bit that's it comes from life is a bit that...
The most unrealistic bit.
Also, like, a bit that's quite kind of human. You know, that's the most kind of human bit of it is, like... a normal person experiencing a big inconvenience at the mercy of someone more powerful than them.
Which is like 99% of rom-coms.
Human life.
It's just like, humans did a thing and now I'm here. And that's what I love to write, is like, when you put people in a situation, it's just like, how would you behave in this very weird situation?
And who could you meet?
Yes, and who could you meet? Who's walking around the corner today? You know, you just never know. You never know.
Do you think there are, like, kind of essential ingredients for both either or a leading lady protagonist and or a romantic interest? What are the, like, things that you
feel?
They've
changed to me. They really have changed. I try really hard, and I say it's 12 years since I started, so 12 years ago everything was very different, and we were very much in the adorable, oh, I'm so clumsy, I dropped my tampons.
We were all Zooey Deschanel.
Yes, we were all Zooey Deschanel. Would that we were. I had the bangs, I had the whole thing. Fringe, I've been in America for ages, sorry. someone will complain.
We know what bangs are.
But I get it all the time.
They're not.
But yeah, I was... And also, like, people would say, oh, she's just, like, that classic clumsy rom-com heroine. But I was like, we haven't met. Like, I am an extraordinary clumsy, awkward foot-in-mouth human. So I felt a lot of kinship with those characters. And also, I think that's why they were so popular, because I think we all did. It was, you know, you didn't see that kind of imperfect woman for a really long time. And then Bridget sort of came along and showed us that women could be flawed, but, you know, endearing. And then
and be a, like, the protagonist of their own
life. Yeah, it could be your own story. And then, unfortunately, the manic pixie dream girl trope swept that up and a mess. And I was living in Brooklyn, so I'm very familiar with that. So that was a weird time. And I was sort of leaning into that. I'm clumsy, but I'm adorable, but I'm just a normal girl, because that's what I was trying to be also, I think, a little bit. Whereas now, like, I genuinely only want to present women that are, like, all the women I know who are smart. And they might not have everything together, but they're not idiots, you know? And even if they're stuck in a situation, we've all been stuck in a situation. So I really, for me, like, for me to root for a heroine, for a woman protagonist in a rom-com, whatever, she's got to have something about her that makes me not go, well, you did this to yourself, basically.
Yeah. Like, you dumb bitch.
Yeah, I don't want to be like, well, you know. It's the girl who went, you know, you go out with your friends, and you're like, you never guess what she bloody did this time. You know, you don't want that girl. Yeah. You really want the, like, yeah, this happened, and it was amazing. And then for the guys, I'm really looking for a degree of emotional intelligence these days. I love a boy that's done the work.
And do you think that has likewise changed?
Oh my God, yeah. Because it was always the bad guy versus, you know, it was always the love triangle. Not to lower the tone and bring it right back to where I start, but it was always, you know, Team Edward, Team Jacob, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. No, we're coming back to that. Don't worry. When you were talking about being clumsy, I was like, we need to talk about Twilight.
Yes. But yeah, I think there was... And I've definitely written books that had, like, is it this guy? Is it that guy? And is it the bad guy who's redeemed? Or is it this incredible guy who chooses her? And not to give spoilers in this, there's, like, elements of all of that in here. But my hero, like, had to be someone that had done the work. Otherwise, he's not a prize, is he? Like, that's the thing. I think for so many years, books presented heroes who were not a prize. And I remember reading loads of books and being like, you would literally not be able to pay me to take this man.
Yeah, like,
and
he may supposed be good looking, but that's literally
he's rich and powerful and good looking, and he can buy me two coats a winter. I'm like, well, I'll buy my own coat and he can see himself out, you know? So I'm very into the idea now of a gent that's done the work and listens. And, you know, there's grand romantic gestures, there's all these things, but, like, don't force something on me that I didn't ask for, thank you very much.
Yeah. Like, romantic gestures are underpinned by the knowledge that this is what the protagonists want, rather than, like, I am forcing this upon you because I'm important.
How many times do you need to watch Pretty Woman nowadays to be like, oh, I mean, firstly, massively problematic anyway, but also I'm like, oh, Richard Gere, not a romantic hero in that movie.
Just
not
good looking.
Just good looking and rich and powerful and redeems the prostitute. And you're like, oh my God. Oh my God.
It's yeah.
Like, Vivian should have just gone off on her own and been like, no thanks.
This is my life.
You picked me up. Yeah. Like, actually.
You were fully aware of
Yeah, you were literally paying for my company, sir. Maybe go see a therapist, work on that, catch up with me in a year or so. But grew up watching that thinking it was this magnificent love story. And I'm like, now watching, they're like, oh.
Yeah, I feel like there are not, maybe, I don't know, around like the kind of early noughties, I feel like Legally Blonde, mm-hmm. that was like a real good moment for like rom-com movies. Because, you know, it has the romantic element, but it also has the like self-romantic
you
element.
Watch Devil Wears Prada and who is the real villain? I mean, obviously everyone, but like Adrien Grenier, not a good boyfriend, not supportive. Like, just drops her when she needs him most. And it's just like,
a dark empty time around the turn of the millennium, wasn't
it? Yeah, a lot of it about 500 Days of Summer. I love you, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, but she was very clear from the beginning what she wanted out of this relationship. You're the one with the problem.
So true.
You know, let's try and move it along.
I do like 10 Things I Hate About You, I think.
Yeah.
I think that has aged quite well.
I haven't watched it in a while. I can't remember anything in it.
Well, Heath Ledger is very good looking.
Yeah, well, he has got that going for him in that. And I used to love that movie. I haven't watched it in so long. Oh, I feel a rewatch coming on.
Yeah. I want that for you. But one thing that you may or may not be rewatching is Twilight.
Yes.
So.
Constantly rewatching, actually.
So you, tell me your feelings about Twilight. Because before we were recording, you were like, I've listened to a Twilight episode. I've got opinions.
It was the first one that I got in on. I am a conflicted lover of Twilight. In that I read the books before I saw the films because I was working in children's publishing when they came out, and I was towards the end, maybe the third one, it wasn't the last one, but I was sort of came in towards the end and just burned through like three of them in a weekend. I was just like, A, I wish I'd had these when I was 15, and B, I guess I'm glad I didn't because I would have been the full Bella. Absolutely 100% like nerdy teenage girl in a mining village with like very few friends and just a lot of books, and I would have been like just sat at my window every night waiting for Edward to show up, because yes, please choose me, eternal being who has waited his whole life for me. Loved it. And then the films came out, and I can't remember if I was in New York when the first one came out. I'm not sure I was, but when I moved to New York, they were still sort of happening, and I had a friend who was working on the books and on the book tie-ins, the film tie-ins. So we would go to the screenings, and people would just be howling with laughter, absolutely howling. And that's when I was like, oh, wait, you can just enjoy these 100% for what they are.
Yeah, you don't need to worry about whether they're good or not.
No, you don't.
They just are.
And then it took me so long, and now I've got like sort of a little group of friends in LA, and we're all, they're our comfort film. And I have a couple of friends who we will always text each other if it's on. And who's watching linear TV? Who's watching actual on TV? But my friend will text me and be like, it's on Sci-Fi, get it on. And you can't not put it on. You can't turn it off. Yeah, I love it. I feel very comforted by it. And I did buy said friend a really ugly off-brand Twilight hoodie for her birthday this year. And
I'm sure it is spectacular.
I assume she's still wearing it. It's like one of those awful like unicorn posters.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like
I can
a
see
lot
it.
Of tie-dye. And
I
then
can
it's
see
got
it in my mind's
Edward and Bella hugging. Yeah, it's so good. It's so good. It was absolutely dreadful. But yeah, I try to always... I'm terrible at like both sidesism on stuff because I'm just terrible at making a decision basically. But I really, really try and see the value in anything that's been incredibly popular, because if it's given enough people joy, then I'm like, I want to see where that came from, what they wanted out of it, what they got out of it, especially if it, for me personally, didn't tick all the buttons, buttons, you tick boxes. So I always try and work it out. But Twilight was immediate for me. I'm like, yeah, I would have been obsessed with this. I would have been like, this is me. I'm waiting for someone to find me. My parents are divorced. No one gets me. Where's my Edward?
Yeah.
And then suddenly there's a hot werewolf as well. Love it.
So are you team Edward or team Jacob?
I mean, team none of them.
Yeah.
Team go back and live with your mum.
Yeah.
But even team Mike, because he was a nice boy. But then I did foolishly read Midnight Sun, and that just...
I've completely lost track of what is what. So Midnight Sun is the Edward POV.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, because I... There's so many Twilight universes.
Bullet for you.
Okay.
Let me have read that for you. Because where Twilight sometimes feels a bit flowery, and maybe it's like we took a long time describing his alabaster skin. Midnight Sun will take 20 pages. Edward has a lot of thoughts and feelings.
I mean, that makes sense, but I hate it.
Yeah, most of them are misogynistic. Many of them are just murderous. He's just, like, constantly on the edge of murdering everything, which makes sense because he's a vampire. But you didn't see it coming. Like, and because he can read everyone's minds, it's like, oh, everyone's thinking horrible things all the time. There's, like, ten... It's not, but it's, like, so many chapters dedicated to them driving to rescue Bella from the ballet studio at the end. But I'm like, why am I reading about you driving on the motorway
to a thing that we like? It was that good in the happening. Original book that we didn't have to read a boring, you know, 3-day car drive.
Prequels and POV books are so hard to do, and I have massive respect for her for attempting it, and I'm sure it made a ton of money which helps the industry, and I'm sure someone loved it, and it was someone's so I bet it was someone's yum, but there was, it's really hard to pull it off because we already know everything in it. So there are very few new things to learn. And I always think, like, whenever you do a prequel, like the Star Wars prequels and stuff, it's like, well, I already know who Darth Vader is. So,
yeah.
And in a book, it's even harder because you're asking me to commit such an amount of time and personal energy to it. And I know what's going to happen. I know what's going to happen.
Because it's not even like it's an origin story, because maybe that would have been quite interesting, like Edward becoming a vampire. Because we've had it described to us in, like, brief detail. Yeah. But,
yeah, Mum got dead poorly. I mean, basically Hamilton, but with a vampire. It's like, Mum was sick, so I'm a vampire now. But Hamilton wasn't a vampire, to the best of my knowledge. But who knows?
We can never be sure.
But, yeah, there's, like, 10 pages where he's banging on the first time they meet when she walks into the science class. And he gets a whiff.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm thinking about the film. I'm not even thinking about the book. But in the book, she's like, oh, I walk in and he pulls a disgusting face and he looks away and I'm like, what have I done? His version of it is like 20 full pages where he's working out how quickly he can murder everyone in the room and get away with it. And he's just like, so I am quick and I am strong, so I could just kill her and get out, but they'll know I've done it, which means I'm going to have to kill everyone in the room. And if I kill everyone in the room, I basically have to kill everyone in the school. And then my brothers and sisters are going to be dead mad because they'll have to kill everyone. And then Carlisle's going to be fucking raging because we're going to have to move. And it's like, basically, he doesn't kill her because of logistics. It takes the edge off. Stephanie Meyer is wild.
What a wild person. What ideas. Yeah. What a person.
Like, not messing good around.
Good for her, but yeah. Pure insanity.
Yeah.
So, not yucking anyone's yum, what is your yum? What do you like to read?
I read everything. I mean, very lucky, having been an author for a long time, I know a lot of authors. Yeah. Like, they are my work friends, because like, that's what we do. So I get sent a lot of books, which is amazing because it means I get a sort of good taste there. I never used to read a lot of my own genre because I've got to write that. So I don't want to read, firstly, don't want to read too much of it when you're trying to write it, because, you know, you have your own well to dip into, and also crippled by professional jealousy. So like, it was a real problem for a long time. And now I've like really found the joy in it, which is amazing. But also I think it's a real plum time for rom-coms and women's fiction. We're allowed to be smart and savvy now. So yay. Love a good literary fiction. I loved this year. I mean, this year has been great. I got new Kazuo Ishiguro, so I was a very happy bunny because he's one of my favorite authors of all time. We can go there. We can just do like Lindsay's non-existent PhD in the futility of love in the Kazuo Ishiguro universe. It never works out. No. All of his books are about how there's no fucking point, but everyone is so passionately in love and trying to save each other through love.
In very, like, understated ways.
Yeah.
Because they cannot express it.
And then at the end, it's like, too bad.
Yep.
Like, every single one of them is like, well, guess that didn't work out for you.
Yeah.
A clone or a robot or old people. Or like, it's just devastating. But I love him, and I was so excited to have that this year. I really loved Megan Abbott's The Turnout, which is just like remarkable. I've read a bunch of thrillers this year. I don't always read a lot of thrillers, but Andrea Bart's We Were Never Here, I love Andy. I know her from Brooklyn, which is one of those really weird things. Like, we became friends when I moved there so many years ago, and she wasn't even writing there. She was a journalist, and she had a Tumblr. She had a very successful Tumblr. Oh my God,
remember Tumblr?
Yeah. And now she's writing these incredible, super feminist, awesome thrillers. So We Were Never Here is so fun. Loved Gillian McAllister's That Night. I really enjoyed this year. I read the Paula Hawkins Slow Fire Burning. Really enjoyed it. I mean, it's very rare that I read a book and I don't enjoy it at all. Like, that basically never happens. Yeah. But then I will also go back and do a lot of rereads. I love to go back and read a 90s YA. Love a 90s YA. Love to see how I got to where I've come from.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting.
What? Tell me more about 90s YA. What is your...
Well, it was just a lot in a way. Like, YA now is, like, so incredible. And there's so much. And I think especially fantasy YA right now is amazing. There was a really great... anthology of stories called Blackout that came out.
I remember it well.
Yeah. Earlier this year, it was amazing, so much fun. And as a former someone who lived in New York and loves New York, it was so beautiful to read these amazing interconnected stories that was also a love letter to New York. It was so well done, and I was like, oh, I wish I'd had this as a teenager, I would have loved it. But back in the sort of early 90s, we were very heavily into extremely mass market paperback series. So there was like the Sweet Dreams series. It was basically one a month. We were just churning them out. There were like
that's
four
literally
plots.
My dream job is to be like the right, like right? The kind of ghostwriter for that kind of
sweet
thing.
Sweet dreams, same. And I have ghostwritten stuff over the years, like especially not as much now because I don't really have time, but I used to because I started out in publishing and film and TV tie-in stuff. So I would sometimes ghostwrite film and TV tie-in books, and it's so much fun because it's ridiculous. But yeah, those novels where it was just like very gentle, chaste 90s. And my nan was like reading Mills and Boone and I was reading Sweet Dreams.
The teen equivalent.
And it was just like, yeah, it's all very sweet. But there were also just really nutty ones. Like there was an astrology series, which I keep talking about. And I'm like, I should stop because I just feel like there's money to be made. But it was,
yeah,
like
this is your astrology
right?
series now.
Each book was like based on a star sign. So it would be like the Libra. And I'm the Libra. So I was like, well, I've got to buy it. I've got to get the Libra one. And then you read the others because, you know.
They're good.
Yeah, they're good. And it was all the same sort of thing as Sweet Dreams, but it was hung on the character was the star sign. Then there was like, I mean, predates the John Greenness of it all, but there was a series that was set in a hospital for children that were terminally ill, and I remember reading all of those, and it was sort of an interconnected universe, and it was love stories, and that, you know, that came back cyclically a couple of years ago. We had all of those books, you know, horribly called Cichlit, but there was all of those. That was in the 90s too. And then Point Horrors, Sweet Valley Highs, all
the classics.
Could not get enough. You could not get me off those series books, just burning through them.
Yeah, I feel like we don't really exist in a like a pure series world anymore, do we?
No, it's just fallen off. It's fallen off as a trend. I would love to see like Sweet Dreams come back from now and have it be diverse and have it be representative and have it be emotionally intelligent. Mm. I just think reading them, they're all like, it's like Carol was the prom queen and her lustrous dark hair and her slender figure and she was a cheerleader, and I was like, God, is there any wonder that like tubby teenage Lindsay with her Coke bottle glasses with her books in the corner was going, well,
I'm
going to
be,
nothing for me.
I'm going to die a virgin. Yeah. I'm going to be single forever.
It's like, didn't kiss a boy till I was 17 and I was lucky to get it. You know, it was very like, well, these are the kind of girls that get love stories. I don't get a love story. And I would genuinely, genuinely love to see it done, and not in a, it doesn't have to always be worthy and, you know, hardback prestigious. I'm like, I just really want there to be cheap, easy, great, emotionally intelligent books for teenage girls.
Yeah, because there's nothing intrinsic to the premise of that that means that it cannot be about a great multiplicity of people with very different experiences.
God, absolutely. Like, so, Blackout in particular, it's like, I mean, it's all written by black authors. I think it's all black authors. Mm.
It is.
And that's the whole thing. And the Obamas are adapting it for Netflix, which is amazing, but there's queer romances, there's lesbian romance in it, there's gay romance in it, there is every kind of relationship. And there was no point in it where I was like, well, this is not for me, a straight white woman. You know, I was like, they're love stories. They're universal love stories. It's, why didn't this exist before? And it's like, we know why. Racism.
Yeah.
But it was so glorious to see it and see it presented for teenagers as the norm and not marketed in a very narrow niche way, but just like, this is an amazing book and everyone should read it. And I was like, more of this, please.
Yeah. Very smart. So what are you reading right now?
Right now, what did I just... I always have a list on my phone and I haven't got my phone. I just finished The X-Hex, which was a Halloween-y rom-com written by an author called Erin Sterling, which was really funny and really sexy and really fun. And even though it was Halloween-y, because it's a bit witchy, I recommend it. If you love anything a little bit witchy, super fun, very smart, super feminist-y in a way that you're like, oh, I didn't see it coming. Amazing. I just read The Paper Palace, which was a very big literary hit. I think it's out here. I'm not sure.
But it was a big hit in the US. I can see the cover in my mind's eye.
It was one of those books that everyone was reading, so you have to read it. And I was like, I'll read it. I'm clever.
I've read a book in my life.
Yeah, it's like I could absolutely read a book that my friend's book club might read. Hmm. So I read that. I enjoyed it. I didn't love it, at the risk of... I think it's very good. I think it's very well done. I think they're adapting it for HBO and I'm really excited to see the adaptation. I just thought it didn't tick all my boxes for me personally, but I could see the value in it. Felt like almost like, this sounds so rude, I hate ever saying anything that could be construed as criticism, and this to me is a huge compliment, but it felt like Donna Tartt light.
Yeah.
Because I think Donna Tartt, Secret History, is my favourite book. So I was like, yay, good for you. What else did I recently read? There's been so many. I just don't know how to put books down at the moment, which is pretty magical.
Time period of your life to be in.
Truly, truly. But that was the last... sort of gave me a bit of a book hangover. I had to park for a minute. And then I had a bunch of proofs for coming out next year, which I would never want to talk about because it's really rude. But I'm like, oh, it's an amazing book, but you can't read it till next April.
Yeah.
Like, it's so rude.
And my final question. So you are visiting us from your home in America. What were you most excited about? Except for like all of the, you know, seeing your friends and family. Like,
oh, food. I mean, like specific. Friends and family.
What are you thinking? Like when you're like, oh my God, I'm going home. I'm going back to England.
Yeah. I'm disgusting. So the first thing I did was I landed at Heathrow and went straight up to my brother's house in Sheffield and stayed with him. And he had got in, bless him, because I haven't seen him in like 2 years, he had got in everything ever. And it was like chocolate oranges filling the fridge and all this like stuff that we had had as kids and all my favourite stuff. And I got home and was like, I just want a tuna pizza. And he fully was just like, get out, you're disgusting.
That's too far.
That is filth.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, you cross the line. Get out my house. I was like, I will sit in the garden and eat it. But they don't do tuna pizza in America. And I know it's a controversial topic. I know it's a controversial topping. But I love a tuna pizza. I love it. And that was the first thing I had. Then we had fish and chips.
Also a thing I guess they don't really
have. So it has been very much, I have been like chasing the dragon of British foodstuffs.
Slightly illegal British food stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Well, just like you wouldn't have it in LA. You know, it's like, imagine going in somewhere and be like, I'd like a load of chips and a fried fish. And there's not that many places where they wouldn't just slap the taste out your mouth and be like, kale though? Kale? I'm like, it's not what I asked for.
That's no way to live.
No way to live.
Well, thank you so much for joining me on our little pod. So is On a Night Like This out...
November 11th.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, that will be now. Yeah, that'll be now. That'll be now.
Yeah.
By the time this episode comes out.
Yeah.
Because my proof just says November 2021. So I did not know if that was going to be a November that has already happened by the time this is out, or a November that has not happened.
An impending November.
Delightful, fun, sparkly, romantic, enchanting book. And I am very... honoured to have been able to talk to you as a grande dame of romance writing. Thank you so much, Lindsay. I hope you had a nice time. It was so nice to meet you.
I did, and you. It was really lovely. So glad we got the twilight in.
Yeah, 100%. Thanks so much, and we'll see you next time. Bye.